So, before I introduce this next speaker, I want to tell you that he's been an inspiration in my life. Since I've met him, he's given me a lot of good feedback in my life and direction as well. And he's a good friend. And I'd like to welcome to the podium from Fresno, Jeff.
My name is Jeff. I'm an alcoholic. Thankful to be here, and welcome the two newcomers and anybody else who may not have introduced themselves to Alcoholics Anonymous. And the newcomers, you know, they're the lifeblood of Alcoholics Anonymous. And the old timers, they're the heart, you know, and that's how this program works. It's just one alcoholic helping another, you know. And I was sharing with Bob and a couple other people, you know, earlier, you know, that stinking thinking started kicking in this morning, man, as soon as I woke up, telling me to get in my car and go home because I don't got nothing to share. And it's not like it's been my first speaker meeting here, you know, but it happens to us, man. Doesn't matter how much time I have or don't have, you know, that stinking thinking every once in a while creeps in, you know. But like AA's taught us, man, just one minute, sometimes one heartbeat, one teardrop at a time, we stay sober and we don't drink no matter what, you know. And my sobriety birth date is November 15th of 1991, and for that I'm truly grateful. And when I got here, I was just here to manipulate the court system one more time, you know, because I wasn't like you people. And when I got to AA, I was forced here. You know, I didn't wake up with two fine women in bed and $10,000 in the bank and a half ounce of crack saying it's time to come to AA, man. I was forced here, you know. And I'm glad I was forced here. You know, I fought everything that's ever happened to me good. I've always fought, man. I've always second-guessed. You know, I was never comfortable wherever I was at. And when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, it was the most uncomfortable place for me to be in when I first got here, man. And throughout the years, I've learned how to surrender and work this program. It's become the most comfortable place for me to be in 99% of the time. You know, I got here, you know, like I said, I'm back-to-back-to-back DUI, suspended license, no insurance. It's just a history of alcohol and substance abuse, womanizing, lying, cheating, gambling. It was all there, man. You know, I was the last one to find out and admit that I was an alcoholic, like I was the last one to find out the things I did the night before. So I'm a blackout drinker, man. It's been many Saturdays and Sundays, you know, since I've gotten that call saying, hey, you remember what you said to my wife last night? Or you remember what you said to embarrass the family one more time? You know, that's the type of drinker that I was, man. You know, swearing off, you know, I'll never drink again. And then about 2 o'clock that afternoon, that thought starts to evaporate, telling me maybe just one. Maybe I just have one, man. Don't drink so much, I'd tell myself. That liquid in that bottle is kicking my butt, but it's not going to do it this time. But only to have it one more time, waking up in jail. And I remember the last time I drank, man. I came to a meeting at the Odak Club, where I got sober at, and I met my boys out at El Torito afterwards, and there was a list of margaritas on the wall, and we started drinking all these margaritas, having a good old time, and I woke up the next morning, I was in jail by myself, and I was thinking, damn, I shouldn't have had that last drink, you know, and what you people taught me is I should have never had the first drink, man. Should have never had the first drink, but I did it for so many years over and over, expecting those different results, you know. I was always different. I was in the wrong place at the wrong time. You know, if you had every excuse and every reason I had, you'd be drinking too, you know. Pour me, pour me, pour me another drink, you know. And I got sober. I got introduced to this place called the Odak Club. And back then, you know, they were smoking in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And everybody smoked. And you had your non-section smoking. There's about 3 seats in the corner. And everybody else was smoking, you know, and where I got sober, I had a fist fight would break out during the middle of the meeting, and it was just part of AA, I thought, man. Guy'd have a seizure, they'd drag him back to the back in the bathroom and go on with the meeting. American Ambulance would come in, they'd open the door, and they'd have that same look I had, like, what the hell's going on here? This dude just had a seizure, but they're still having an AA meeting, man. So I thought, you know, these people are pretty serious here, you know. Thought about it, what a bunch of ruthless son of a bitches these people are, man. Because I thought they'd stop the meeting, it'd be over, get my cork art signed, and I'd get out. And it wasn't happening that day, man. You know, and we had some old-timers in those rooms that, you know, they talked about the language of the heart, man. About surrendering. We give it away to keep it, and we hurt in order to grow. You know, and like I said, 1 minute, one heartbeat, one teardrop, and one cuss word at a time. I've learned how to stay sober by the grace of God, and people like you have showed me this. just through your kindness, man. I didn't know about kind. I thought kindness, people that were kind were weak when I got here, man. I didn't know about tender love, the language of the heart, giving a way to keep it and reaching out your hand and doing something good for somebody without expecting anything back, man. I always wanted something back somewhere down the line. I like to tell you, man, I'll tell you a lie on Tuesday to set you up for that kill on Saturday, man. I'm already drunk before I take that first drink. I've learned here in AA. You know, just don't wake up with the bottle in my hand. Or I just don't, all of a sudden, don't know what's happened. You know, I've had every excuse in the world, man. We never look down on another alcoholic unless we're picking them up, they tell me, man. It's the only time you ever look down on another person in AA, man. You know, and I got sober at the ODAC club, and there used to be this guy that would walk in, you know, because I'm a judger, man. I'm judging. I'm looking. I walk into the room, sit down, scan the whole room, and tell you something bad about every one of you without ever saying a word to you. And through over the years, man, I've learned to come to meetings and walk into the room and scan the room and look at every one of you and tell you something good or say a prayer for you or think something good about you, man. Everything I got here, I fought for. And then I've learned here, the strong don't survive here. The powerless do. I'm powerless over people, places, things, and situations. You know, and I was at the ODAC club, and my court date was coming up, and there this guy would come in a suit, big old dude. Rotten Ron's his name, man. Rotten Ron's about 6'4", big old man. I think, man, not this asshole again, man. And then he was talking one day about he's one of the biggest DUI defense attorneys in the state. So the light went on, man. I need this guy right here. You know, my court date's coming up. I'm gonna learn how to manipulate the court system. I need this guy in my life, you know. And I walked up to him and, you know, and I introduced myself. And he just looked at me and I said, hey, you know, I'm looking for a sponsor. And he says, here's my phone number. Give me a call. And when I called him that night, he kind of laughed. He said, usually that's the quickest way to get rid of somebody. Give them your phone number. They'll never call you. You know, and we began this relationship that I've never, ever had with another man. And he would be dead in my ass at certain times after meetings and tell me stuff. And I remember when I first got sober and they'd say, Jeff, you want to share it? I said, nah, no, thank you. And after about the third or fourth time, he walked up right behind me during the meeting. And he says, I guarantee you, if that was a crack pipe or a drink, you wouldn't be saying no, thank you. So I'm going to suggest that you start participating in your own recovery. You know, and we had many other discussions because he didn't really give a crap about how I felt or what I thought. He just told me, you know, this is a program of suggestions, but he pretty much told me exactly what I was going to do, man. And this man helped me stay sober one day at a time, man. And unfortunately, you know, when I first got here, I asked him about Old Duels. I said, you know, can we drink Old Duels? He said, absolutely not. He says, you know, you drink Old Duels, you might as well start drinking, you know. And, you know, about year four, I was sober about 4 years. His daughter was getting married, and him and some other guys still claim some time in AA wherever they're drinking Old Duels. And I was just kind of watching him. And he walks right over like the old commercial and opens it up, puts it right in front of me and says, go ahead and have a drink. I said, I'm not drinking that. He says, no, I'm your sponsor. I'm telling you, go ahead and have a drink. So I'm not drinking it, you know. So after that, after a couple months after that, he proceeded to go back out for another 10 years. And just like what he taught me, better you than me, you know. It's a selfish program here, you know. And like they tell me, man, you want to stay sober? That's our business. You want to go out and get drunk and loaded? That's your business, man. All the money in the world can't keep me sober, but can get me drunk, man. And everything I've learned here in Alcoholics Anonymous has been through other people, through just meetings that I've gone through, and I've learned to listen and listen to learn, you know. And before that, I remember the first time I got 60 days or 90 days, and I was going to be gone. It was on a Monday, and then Saturday they were giving out the chips. And so it was 90 day. I stood up, and everybody clapped for me. I got my chip. Everybody's clapping for me. I sit down, and Rotten Ron stands up, and he said, he's a liar. Put that chip back. You got two more days. He said, you could be drunk between now and then, so put that chip back. You don't have your 90 days yet, you know? So I proceeded to put that chip back, but I also learned something about fronts and, you know, always wanting something in advance, you know? Always wanting something that I never had or worked for yet, man, you know? And he told me I was going to get in the VA hospital, you know? And And thank God at that time they had an inpatient program in Fresno, and I got into the inpatient program, and that's where I met Bobby. I woke up in detox, and there's this guy standing there with a big old smile looking at me, and it was Bobby, you know, and I'm thinking, man, what's up with this cat, you know? And we became friends, and we stayed friends, you know, and I thought after I got out of the detox, I'd get rid of him. And the first night that we, you know, I'm in the program, we're going out to an AA meeting, and everybody's jumping in the back of the van. No one wants to sit in front, so I jump in the front. I look over, and there's Bobby driving the van. I'm like, God dang, not this cat, man, you know, because he was kind, gentle. He was always humorous. Nothing was funny to me when I got here, man. Everything was serious. I was very, very serious when I got here, man. You fell and tripped, I might chuckle a little bit, you know, things like that, you know, and had that warped sense of humor. I didn't know anything about, you know, just being a nice, kind, gentle person, you know. And the only thing that's got to change here is everything. And by the grace of God, you know, and I say that because, you know, I didn't get here a minute too soon or a minute too late. You know, I got here right on time. As I stayed sober, I've learned I got here on God's time. And everything happened the way it was supposed to happen right before. It's like right now, before I came in here, my good friend called me, the one that set me down. My two buddies set me down in the restaurant and they said, you know, we got a problem. And I said, what's the matter with you guys? And he said, it's not us, it's you. Either you get sober or our friendships are over. And before that, or right after that, the sponsor that I have today, I've had two sponsors since I've been here. And my sponsor today, Paul, he calls me up and he says, you know, Jeff, you got a best friend? I said, yep. I said, you know, back then, you know, you're macho and this and that. He goes, would you die for your best friend? Yeah, I'd die for my best friend. Would you do this for your best friend? Yep. Would you do that? Yep. Because once you become your own best friend, once you get sober, you know, 26 and a half years later, things like that still resonate in my head, man. Or Rotten Ron telling me, the only time you miss a meeting, Jeff, is if you die on the way to one. I used to think that was funny as shit, man, you know. And man, this dude's nuts, right? And he would tell me, you know, things like, you know, he would also tell me some things about, you know, about life. And he would tell me, you know, you ever find a good enough excuse to go out and have a drink? You give me a call first. If it's good enough for both of us, we'll both go out and have a drink. But before we, him and I go down to have a drink, he'd have to call his sponsor. And thank God I haven't found that excuse yet, man. Or I haven't followed through on the excuse. You know? Because I'm only one drink away. I can never tell you I'll never have a drink again. And I can't never ever tell you I'll never smoke another hit of crack. But what I can tell you, if I continue to do what these old timers taught me when I got here, of one day at a time, of coming to meetings on a daily basis and giving away to keep it, I got a better chance of staying sober. There's always saying in my meetings that I go to, those who quit coming to meetings don't stick around long enough to find out what happens to those who quit coming to meetings, man. And thank God for Rotten Ron, because he was just hardcore all the time, man. It was all about AA. There was nothing else. He didn't want to talk to me about my mom. He didn't want to talk to me about my sister. He didn't want to talk to me about sports. He wanted to talk about AA, man. And he was just rough and very rigid. And he put these things in my head about it, you know, because there's a guy in my home group, you know, John P. talks about we all come in here with PhDs. We all come in here with that thing called piled high and deep. And what's piled high and deep is just a bunch of bullshit, lying, manipulation, and thieving. So when you meet the right person that starts, you know, calling me on my stuff, it was a very rude awakening because I never had another man talk to me the way this guy talked to me, man. But he'd be up and, you know, on me, and guys would, you know, after the meeting or the next day, they'd see me and they'd chuckle and they'd go, hey, your daddy was out there lecturing you, huh? And they'd be like, yeah, daddy's keeping me sober, though. Daddy's showing me how to stay here one day at a time, man. And, you know, in the ODAC club, man, you know, it was well known in Fresno not to go to that meeting, man. And like I said, there was smoke, there was gangsters, there was pimps, prostitutes. It was just, the whole round. It was like being in a bar, man. And I felt comfortable there, man. These were my type of people, man. I felt real comfortable with these type of people, right? But they were talking about a different language. They're talking about different things, and how they were staying sober, you know. And you know, I started getting this program. You know, I got into the VA hospital, and I graduated. And then I had to go to the 1040 house. And I remember I was driving, and I pull up to the ODAC club. And, you know, Rotten Ron's my sponsor, and he's like, supposed to be driving? I said, nope. He said, let me see your keys. Got my car, took off, right? This was at noon. So I waited till the 5:30 meeting. He didn't show up. 8 o'clock meeting. This is before, you know, we had cell phones, all that. So I'm waiting at the ODAC club, and Ron never shows back up. So I had to get a ride home, and the next day I call him, and he says, we'll meet at the club. And he comes pulling up, throws me my keys, and he says, I'm going to make a suggestion to you. I'm going to suggest you don't drive that car again until you get your license. And that was the first suggestion I ever took in Alcoholics Anonymous, was not to drive, man. So I rode a bike for about a year and a half in Fresno. I lived at the 1040 house, which is on the west side of Fresno, and I rode that bike everywhere, man. And, you know, I had my first job in AA, man, you know, was cleaning toilets. And I cleaned the best damn toilet in Fresno, man. You know, that's what AA has done for me. You know, all I wanted to do is I wanted to stay sober more than I wanted to get drunk, man. And things just started changing for me. You know, when I got here, I was on Social Security disability because I went head on with the semi and I was in a wheelchair for about a year and a half. And during that time, you know, people would think, you know, the alcoholic or people, just normal people think, dude, he'll never drink again. But I was out at the nightclubs in my wheelchair, popping pain pills, drinking beer, snorting cocaine, having a good old time, man. And, you know, I'd get that check, and in my magnifying, magnificent mind, I would tell myself, you know, I'm going to get this check, and I'm going to put this money over here for my bills and this money over here for my alcohol and drugs. So about 2 days later, man, I needed to borrow money for my bills so I can go out and drink and use, man. You know, so, but the deep down stuff, you're only sick as your secrets. You know, I have a sister that's a missionary, and she's, you know, somewhere in the world, right? Well, she left her checkbook at my mom's house, so I had to go back to my mom's when I was in the wheelchair. And I said, you know what? I'm going to take one of them checks, and I'm going to write a check to myself. But I'm going to put the money back before anyone even notices. Well, I got away with it one time. I got away with it two times. I got away with it three times. My sister's coming back to the United States. She can't come back because her checks are bouncing. She can't get an airplane ticket. You see, I could never tell anybody that until I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, man. I couldn't tell you that, you know what, I get paid on Friday, spend my whole paycheck on Friday night, waking up going, God, let there be one $100 bill in these crumbled up ones. And then calling the girlfriend that I was with at the time on Monday, telling her how much I loved her because my car payment and rent was due. And I just cheated on her all weekend. That's the type of pig I was when I got here, but I couldn't admit that stuff either, man. I'm only as sick as my secrets, man. And if I got some secrets in here, man, you know, I need to get them out. That's what they told me, you know, and I didn't understand that about being honest with another human being and admitting my wrongs, you know, and so I got out of the VA and I was cleaning toilets, and Ron gave me a job, and Ron's law firm was right across the street from where I worked at, my other job. And he would pull out of his office, and he'd honk the horn, and he'd say, hey, you going to meeting today? I go, yeah, I'll be right out. I would come running out, and he'd take off and leave my ass, man. And I'd get to the meeting, and he would tell me, you get your ass to a meeting, and we'll get you home. Because I guarantee you, if there was a party going on down the street, 2 miles or 4 miles down the road, you'd find a way to get there. So I suggest you find a way to get to your meetings, man. And this man just taught me about coming to meetings. Meetings aren't AA. Meetings not all of AA. You know, it's just part of AA, man. But it builds the foundation. And he told me, you know, no matter how important I become, how many kids I have, when I start going back to work, when I start going to school, whatever it may be, my ass better be in meetings, man. You better be in a meeting on a daily basis, Jeff. And things like that just kind of stuck with me, just the way that he parlayed these ways of speaking to me and these avenues that he took with me, man. You know, and I got out, and I was on Social Security disability, and I got this letter, and it said I had to come in for this hearing, this exam, right? So, man, I'm still manipulating. The only thing I had done is I put the drink down. So I go to this doctor's office, and I think I even went in there on crutches or with the cane trying to manipulate, and the doctor did his exam, and he said, you'll be getting a letter. I got a letter, and it told me I had like two months left of Social Security disability. And I've been around in AA long enough, and I went to Ron. He said, there's a school down the street. You know, you need to get an education. And I went back to school, and I started hanging out with these certain different people, and next thing I know, I became student. I was a senator, and then I became student body president at Fresno City College. And during this time, things kind of really happened for me real quick. And I founded a program called The Choice, and it was a gang violence substance abuse prevention program. And I took it from a volunteer to sole proprietorship into a nonprofit organization. And through this organization, just the work that we were doing in Fresno, I got picked out of a national pool of applicants, and I worked out of the White House at that time, at the Office of National Drug Control Policy, which advised President Clinton on illicit drug use. So here I'm at 4 years, and I'm going back to the White House, man. And for a guy like me, I should have never been there, man. You know, I had more excuses why I shouldn't be there than why I was going, you know. And but I was still going to meetings on a daily basis. I was working with others. I was going in the juvenile hall. I was giving away to keep it, you know. And I got there, you know, to Washington, D.C., and the first day I get there, you know, I go in and check in, and the Secret Service is behind the glass, and the guy calls up on the phone. The guy comes down. And they're giving me the rundown about how things work here, right? And he gives me this badge, and he says, "I'm gonna tell you what. You lose this badge, you're going home." Yeah, cool. All right. You know. So noon comes around, and my office is down by the White House, and I start walking, and I get in the cab. And the closest meeting is called DuPont Circle. So I go to DuPont Circle, and the meeting's going on. Seventh Edition comes out, and I'm looking for my wallet. I can't find my wallet. And I'm thinking, shoot, man, I left my wallet. I left it in the brought. I brought a lunch. So I thought I threw it in the trash by accident. It wasn't in the trash. And I walk outside, and a cab drives by, and I think it was that cab company. And another cab came by, no, it's that cab company. And there's probably 20, 30 different cab companies in Washington, D.C. And I'm thinking, I'm getting confused. I'm getting hungry, lonely, angry, homely, and lonely and tired. And so I'm standing there, and I lost my wallet. And so where I worked out, the executive office was about 3 miles down the road. So I'm walking, and the me conversation starts up. About maybe I should have a drink, maybe I should do this, and the AA's kicking in, saying maybe you better stay sober and keep walking, and, you know. So I walk back, and I go, and I walk up, and the guy's looking at me. He's waiting for me to flash my badge, and he's like, give me the head nod, and I'm giving him the head nod, and he goes, well, where's your badge? And I go, I lost my badge, I lost my wallet. He's like, oh. So he gets on the phone, calls, and the two guys come down. I just got done talking to him like an hour ago, and the guy's looking at me, and he goes, you know you're going home, right? I said, yeah. He goes, just kidding, come on in, you know. So I went in, and like I said, this is before we have cell phones and everything. About 4 o'clock that afternoon, my mom calls, and she goes, Jeffrey, did you lose your wallet today? And I'm like, yeah. She goes, well, the cab driver called. He's got your wallet. He said that he has never, ever seen this. He's been driving cabs for over 15 years in Washington, D.C. And 2 fares got in after you, and your wallet sat on the back seat. And he's got your wallet, and he wants to return it to you. What I've learned there, man, that was God telling me that I'm doing the right thing. That was just a little notice that, you know, that everything's going to be all right. Just stay sober one day at a time, no matter what. No matter what's going on or what's not happening, just don't drink today, man. And ended up staying there, and I met a guy named Dave Duncan, and I thought he owned the Lano Club, because he was Mr. Everything there in AA, and I was just watching this cat, and he took me to Pockets of Enthusiasm when Johnny H. and all the big names were younger, and they could still do their spiel, and you know, this dude, we stood up, and we had to shake everybody's hand in these rooms, like 200-300 people made me stand there and shake everybody. I'm thinking, what the hell has this got to do with AA? You know, why am I sitting here having to shake everybody's hand and congratulate them and tell them thank you? But it's just things like that. The only thing that changes is everything, man. You know, and my boss was on Clinton's cabinet, so we got to go to things like the Rose Garden. Dignitaries would come, and so my boss came to me, and he goes, hey, I got 2 tickets to the Christmas tree lighting. Why don't you go ahead and go? So my mind says, all right. So my buddy couldn't go, so I went by myself. And The Secret Service is all set up, and you know, I'm going to manipulate a little bit. I put my badge out so they can, you know, they glance, they see, they know how to recognize. So I'm just walking, man. I keep walking. I start walking down the hill, start where all the seats are, and I'm probably in about the third or fourth row. So I sit down, and they're turning people away, and I'm sitting there, and all of a sudden it's starting to turn dark, and the snowflakes are coming down, and Kathy Lee Gifford or Crosby comes up, and I said, man, she sings this song, I'm going to lose it, man. She started singing a song. I'm crying my eyes off, and all these people around me are looking at me, and I'm telling them, man, you wouldn't understand. They're saying, are you okay? You okay? You know? And it's things like that in AA that let me know that, you know what? Everything's going to be okay, you know? And I came home, you know, and I got my education, and, you know, Ron was still my sponsor, and it was business as usual, getting to meetings. And, you know, Ron would tell me stuff, you know, you come in here and share about recovery, man, and we'll bring in your family and we'll let them talk about your drunkalogs, because I guarantee you it's two different things, man. You know, and sometimes I didn't like the way Ron spoke to me and how direct he was and about how we talked about this language of the heart. And, you know, we stayed sober together, man. We worked this program. I started sponsoring people, and I started learning about people's personalities, about how people need different things, man. Different things, different times of their sobriety, different increments of sobriety mean different things. You know, and if I'm sponsoring somebody, it's up for me to figure that out. Just like my sponsors have to do with me, figuring me out and what I need and how I need and the surrenders and the directions and the suggestions, you know, that, you know, when I got here, you know, I had a pretty foul mouth, you know, and some people asked me to keep coming back and some asked me never to come back to the meeting again, you know, and I got kicked out of my first home group, and that was at ODAC Club, you know, because of my mouth. And I started going over to this place called the Lano Club, and there's a man there by the name of Tomas who will be speaking here next month, or in 2 months. And I remember walking in there, and he's talking about, would you rather look good or would you rather feel good? Shit, I'd rather look good. I don't know about you people, you know. Would you rather be right or would you rather feel right? I'd rather be right, you know. And and I thought this dude was odd, and he was saying things, and, you know, it was just a different level of sobriety. And and, you know, and as the years have gone on, you know, I've learned from this man, like a lot of us from Fresno, this guy, you know, and I'd rather, you know, feel good. I'd rather feel right. I don't got to be right, you know. And sometimes through AA and through life, you know, it's addition by subtraction, man. I got to cut what doesn't work for me out, whether it's people, places, things, or situations, you know. So I started going to the Lano Club, and that's my home group. And now the Lano Club is a place where people tell these new people that are coming in, don't go to the Lano Club, man, because it's still harsh. But it's not like the olden days, like, you know, like I said, when the fist fights would break out, you know. And, you know, I got a couple guys that I sponsor, you know, that I've learned more from them than I've learned from my sponsors, man. You know, just because it's just what they're dealing with in life and how things are going today. And for me, you know, AA, you know, some people say AA doesn't work, but it works for me, man. It's worked for me for these last 26 and a half years, and the one day at a time, you know. And and the guy I sponsor, Bank Robber Mike, who spoke here last month, you know. And I'm fortunate to have like five or six guys that I work with that work with me, and that's how this is given away to keep it, man, you know. And I go to meetings, and you know, I'm the type of guy, when I first got here, you know, I'd go to a new job, and I should have been the supervisor by the end of the first day, man, because I knew more than everybody in there, you know. And and how is this company running without me, you know. And and I learned about anonymity, you know, real quick, you know, because when I'd see people out, meetings when I first got sober, I'd say, hey, man, no one know you from AA, and, you know, and Ron corrected me, and a couple other old-timers corrected me. And I got this job, this sales job that I always wanted with this company. And we went to training for 8 weeks, and at the end of the 8 weeks, the last day, they said, hey, tomorrow we want you to come in and talk about what was the most significant life-changing event in your life. Shoot, I had about 5 years, man, so it was AA. So I was the last one to speak in this classroom, and I turned it into a speaker meeting, and they're all looking at me like they didn't know what to do, you know. I'm telling them stuff, and at that time, like I said, I had a little mouth on me. And I 2 weeks later, I'm in my office and they walk up and they give me this pink slip. And they told me that I'm no longer needed anymore to work for the company. So what that taught me is about anonymity real quick. So I made some mistakes in Alcoholics Anonymous. But the main thing is I haven't drank over them. There's no excuse to go out and have a drink. Relapse isn't a part of recovery, man. It's part of myself. We'll run riot one more time, man. I hear it all the time, man. I hear about people that all of a sudden, you know, they get the wife back, they get the job, they get all the stuff back, and then all of a sudden they disappear and they come back 2 weeks later telling us how great their life is, and then they come back about 3 weeks later, a month after that, and you could hear it in them. You could hear the change, but they're telling you how great their life is and they're doing real well, but they're not coming to meetings and this and that. And then you see them about 6 months to 2 years later, they got 30 days one more time, man. And by the grace of God, that's not me yet. I can't tell you, like I told you earlier, I can't tell you I'll never have a drink again. But what I've learned here through my sponsor and other people was to keep coming back no matter what, you know. And, you know, when I lost that job, you know, I thought it was the end of the world, just like everything. Everything was a federal case when I got here, man. You didn't tell me good morning. It was a federal case, you know. My feelings got hurt real quick, you know. And when I got sober at the ODAC club, these old-timers would tell you, you don't want to be here. There's the effing door. Get the F out of here. And when you're ready, come on back in, man. And I'm thinking, man, why are these people talking like that, man? You know, why are they being so cruel to us people, you know? But they knew us, you know. And then I soon found myself saying that same old shit. You know, that they were saying is I got a little bit of time, man, you know. And I've learned that, you know what, everybody in here is important. And one day at a time, man, we just don't drink no matter what, you know. And through my years of being sober, you know, we've dealt with tragedy. You know, I've had 7 surgeries in the last 15 months. And 3 weeks ago, I had my last one, hopefully. And the night before that, my dad died. And but you know what the thing about AA is, I was up in San Francisco and Fellowship Johnny, these guys know, picked me up and took me to a meeting, you know, and I was in a meeting the night before, and that's how this program works, man. I can give you every excuse in the world to go out and have a drink, but I can't give you one good reason, man. And the bottom line is I come to Alcoholics Anonymous not to have a drink, and sometimes it's just about being manageable. You know, I got a 17-year-old kid that's never seen me drink yet, man, you know, and that's by the grace of God, you know, And that kid, man, loves me, and I love him. And he lets me know that he loves me, and I let him know I love him, man. And if I could only love everybody like I love that kid, if I could love my woman that way, if I could love you people that way unconditionally, I'd have a much smoother life. But my mind starts telling me different things that you should know better. And I remember when, you know, one time I was eating breakfast with Paul, and we were talking about people relapsing. And it used to frustrate me. Because I always think, man, maybe I'm next. All these people I got sober with are going out and having a drink. And I was complaining to him, and we're sitting there at Denny's, and he's looking right at me. And he gets this little look in his face. And he says, hey, those people going out and relapsing over alcohol and drugs? I go, yeah. He goes, that's like you relapsing over women. And he just started eating his breakfast. And I'm thinking, man, the son of a bitch, man. You know? Pull my covers one more time, you know? And it's because of things like that, and people being honest with me, someone such as that being honest, that I've been able to stay sober, man. You know, and you know, Paul, when he first became my sponsor, and I'd call him up, and I'd have a bunch of stuff going on, going 1,000 miles an hour, and he'd just go, Jeff, you been to a meeting today? And I'd say, nope, and he'd hang up on me. And as time went on, you know, after about 5 or 6 years, I'd have some problems, a little bit of problems going on. And he goes, you been to a meeting lately? Have you been to a meeting today? And I said, not yet. He said, you want to hang up or do you want me to hang up, man? You know? So those are the advancements here in AA, that how this program works, you know? And, you know, for me, you know, AA, you know, isn't my whole life, but it's part of my whole life, man. It's how I carry myself outside of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I don't work a perfect program here, man. I still get angry. I still get a little road rage. I still get a little bit upset. I still get in that stinking thinking. Like I said today, you know, my mind was telling me earlier, man, get in my car and drive right back to Fresno, man. You don't got nothing these people want to hear. You know, that stinking thinking starts creeping in, man, to defeat myself, you know. And, you know, it's been a lot of years since I've been in jail, you know. And last time I went to jail, I had about 10 years sober, 11 years sober. And I'd fought to get custody of my kid, and I'd been through the trials and ups and downs and all that. And I finally got my court papers. I got my 49%. So it was my weekend. And my sponsor comes from this big family, and he was having this 4th of July event. So I go to pick up my son, and she says, "You're not taking him." I'm like, "Yeah, I'm taking him. It says it right here. It's my weekend. Because you're not taking him." Next thing you know, the cops are coming. Two cops show up, and I tell them my side of the story, her side of the story. Because we got to call a supervisor because it's almost a domestic thing here, but we're probably going to let you go. So supervisor comes in, and he comes out. He starts telling me, because at that time, I carried a badge, and he tells me what a punk I am. I knew I was going to jail. And I said, "But it's my weekend." And he took that paper, crumbled it up, stuck it in my pocket, cuffed me up. I went to jail. And see, before, I made my choices and my decisions off my emotions, man. My emotions, my wants, and my desires have always got me in trouble, man. And I couldn't separate that. And I can't tell you that I stopped making my choices and decisions off my emotions and my wants and my desires that immediate minute. But what it did, it kind of just took me to another level of recovery, man. It taught me about making my choices off my emotions, man. You know? And so what that did, it just kind of took me into another level of AA, man. And like Bob and I have talked about before, you know, the longer we stay here, the softer we become, man. When I got here, if you didn't have a thick mustache and you didn't slick your hair back like I did and you didn't talk like me, I didn't hear you, man. I looked you straight in the face and not hear a word you're saying. And that's always been my problem, you know. And I started listening, you know. These women would come up after the meeting. I'd be angry. I'd be cussing, and they'd want to give me hugs, and I didn't want, you know. I'm still a bad hugger. I'd do the side hug, man, but they'd be giving me hugs, and I didn't know how to accept that. I didn't know how to do that, man. I felt weird, you know. And over the years, I've learned how to give hugs and tell people I love them, you know, and it's allowed me. You know, my family, I got 7 kids, 7 brothers and sisters, and we never told each other we loved each other, man, until I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. About the 3rd or 4th year, and then I would talk on the phone. I'd say, "Hey, I love you," and the phone would be silent, man. And they'd hang up, and I'd hang up, and then all of a sudden, you know, everybody in my family would be telling we love each other because of Alcoholics Anonymous. And my brother's a big gym rat, you know. And one day I'm riding my bike down Blackstone, and I'm thinking of my brother, and I'm going to say hi to him at Gold's Gym, and I roll up in there, and he's standing there with all his buddies, and they're all looking in the mirror, and I walk up. And I give him a big old hug, and he's like looking at me, and I just said, "You know, I just stopped by to tell you I loved you," and he's just like looking at me, and they're all looking at me, and they're going, "Okay," I get my bike and take off, man. And today we laugh about that shit, man, because of Alcoholics Anonymous, man. See, Alcoholics Anonymous has done for me things that I've always wanted to do, man. It's given me a life. It's given me the ability to go ahead and follow my dreams, man, you know. And you know, I think it was probably after about year 15, man, these changes come along. Well, let me back up a little bit. You know, we worked the steps here, and I remember, you know, when I got sober and I worked my first time going through the steps with Ron, you know, I was coming up to make amends, and I told Ron, you know, "Hey, there's this guy over here that owns this car shop, you know, and he's amends." He says, "Go in and make amends." So I go in to this car shop, and I start telling the lady behind the counter. And when they worked on my car, they didn't have computers. So now they got computers, right? So I walk in, tell her my name, and she's looking at me. And I said, "Hey, I owe you guys some money." And she's on the computer. And she goes, "You sure you owe us money?" I said, "Yeah." So I start telling her the story. And she's looking at me. Her face turns red. And she picks the phone up, and she calls in her husband, who's probably 6'5", and just a big man. They're race car people. And she goes, "Honey, do you recognize this guy?" And he's like, "No." She says, "Why don't you tell him the story?" So I'm standing there, and then this room all of a sudden got smaller. And I'm thinking, how the hell I get out of here? And I said, "You know, my name is such and such. Mr. such and such sent me here to get my car, you know, fixed. And you told me to take it for a test drive. And I never came back. And I owe you about $714 and something cents." And as I'm telling him this, he's just looking at me, and he's shaking his head, and his face is turning bright red. And I'm thinking, oh, shit, you know. And he's just looking at me, and it seemed like eternity. It's probably about 30 seconds, and he reaches his hand out, He puts his hand out to shake my hand. He says, you know what? You stay sober, we'll call it even. And I'm like, you know, I don't got any money, but I'll go ahead and I'll clean up the oil. I'll wash the cars. He goes, no, you don't hear me. You stay sober, we'll call it even. Because of people like that, you know, and 2 weeks prior to that, I was in the same restaurant as him and his wife. And they were sitting right there like this. And I couldn't even enjoy my dinner because I was ducking and hiding because I thought they remembered me after 7 years, man. It took me 7 years to go back and make amends to these people. But see, that's what we do is we clean the wreckage of the past no matter what it is or what it is. The majority of the time, unless, you know, you did something I didn't do or something that's way out there, you know. And it's things like that that sometimes, you know, when I don't want to forgive, then when I get these me conversations, when I'm in a room by myself and they tell me I'm outnumbered, or when I'm driving and I got these me conversations going on and I don't feel I need to talk to somebody in AA, I'm going to make this right choice, I'm going to make this right, and it kind of blows up in my face every once in a while. See, because the longer we stay here, man, there's less wreckage of the past or less wreckage of the present. Because if there isn't, then obviously I'm doing something wrong. I'm just staying sober. And just staying sober is not good enough sometimes, man. I got to do the next indicated thing and continue to reach out my hand to other people and take the message to another level and do something good for somebody and don't tell anybody, you know. And you know, for me, this program has always worked. The AA way has always worked, man. If I try to mix it up and take some old behaviors in with the AA, it just doesn't work, man. It's flat. Nothing works, man. So, you know, I come to meetings on a daily basis. I still got a sponsor. I still work with other people, you know, I still get into, you know, I go to meetings at times just so it can become manageable, man. There's times in my life where I get a little bit unmanageable. Things aren't going my way and I think they should be going certain ways. And like I said, you know, my dad just recently died and 7 kids, 7 different personalities and 7 people want 7 things that are all the same. And what A's taught me, like I was talking to Bob yesterday, is to get out of the way, man. Because it's really not that important. Because all it is finance, romance, are the 2 biggest offenders in Alcoholics Anonymous that take people back out. And right now it's a financial thing. But see, I don't have that anyway, so it's none of my business. So I'm removing myself out of the picture of the line of fire. Because that's what AA's taught me, man. It's just simple. Keep it simple. I want to complicate things. It's a simple program for complicated people. And I can complicate a lot of things real quickly, man. You know, so for me, you know, sobriety works, you know, even like today, like I said, I was in the funk today. My mind was telling me all day to just go home and, you know, but, you know, they say bring the body and the mind will follow. And I've had a lot of meetings like that in my time, man. You know, I remember when I first got sober, man, everything would be going great. It'd be nice. It'd be a nice spring day in Fresno. Everything's going well. I walk into a meeting. And by the time I left that meeting, I felt like getting drunk, man. You know, I couldn't tell you why. But I just know I felt that way. It didn't mean that I had to get drunk. It just meant that I felt those things, man. That today I can feel. You know, when I got here, I didn't want to feel too much. I didn't feel too many things, you know. The alcohol and the substances that I put in my body took care of those things, man. Today, you know, I'm not pretty much in denial, you know. Like I said, I raised my kid. I go to meetings. And because of my sponsors and what they've taught me about showing up, suiting up and showing up, you know. If I got 2 jobs, my ass better be in 2 meetings, man. You know, it's like, you know, when you first get sober and you see this newcomer asking the old timer, you know, how many meetings you need to go to a week? And the old timer says 1. Well, how come I see you at a meeting every day? Because I don't know which one I'm going to need, man. You know, I don't know which one I'm going to need or what's going to be happening on certain days. I can't predict, man. So I find when I'm in a meeting, when I'm praying every day, I'm doing the next indicated thing. No matter what's going to happen that day, my life runs a little bit smoother, man. You know, and I want to thank Glenn for having me out here speaking with you guys, sharing my experience, strength, and hope. And hopefully, you know, you guys heard something here that helped you stay sober one day at a time. Thanks for letting me share, bro.
Jeff, one more time.